Hi, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Celeste Stein Show. I'm your host, Dr. Celeste Stein, and I am so delighted for you to join me today as we prepare to hear from my special guest, Dr. Melody McLeod, who is the first Black woman to establish an obstetrician-gynecologist practice in DeKalb County, Georgia. Dr. McLeod is an amazing trailblazer who specializes in taking care of women in her community and looking after their reproductive health, pregnancies, and deliveries. She is also known for her work as an author, public speaker, and media consultant. Dr. McLeod, it is certainly an honor to have you join me today. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, Dr. Stein, thank you for having me. It's my honor and my pleasure to join you on this lovely day. Thank you so much.
Well, you're quite welcome. And we're going to begin by delving into women's health in particular today and unfolding some of the information that I've been able to review regarding your new book, Black Women's Wellness. And you've got this guide to health, sex, and phenomenal living. But before we go there, I'd like to start by asking you about your journey as a health professional. And just wanted to, start by asking you, what made you d decide to, become a doctor in the first place?
Well, I think the first feeling I had about becoming a physician was when I was a little girl. I actually had at that time, and we're talking decades ago, I had a Black female pediatrician. Her name was Dr. Doris Weathers, no A, Weather. And when I was a little girl in New York City, I used to love to go to her office and actually smell the rubbing alcohol in the air. I don't know what that did for me. I just smelled fresh and clean. And also too, I remember hearing people say, just sitting in the waiting room, that she helped people feel better. And I just think that stuck with me. I don't know if it was some astrological energy I have about healing people or whatever, but I think that was my first interest in that. And then also when I got into high school and had a health class, that kind of intersected with the time of my becoming a Christian. So health was learning about the body and how the body works. And then I was thinking, wow, this is just kind of a miracle type thing, especially for me going into OBGYN. I thought about it back then. I was like, wow, you mean to tell me well, you have sex and a sperm and an egg get together and make a baby? I think I just kind of freaked out about that at my young age. So I think Dr. Weathers was really the first visual that I had about entering into the medical field, and it stayed with me all throughout, despite a naysayer I had in my with my high school teacher, which I can tell you about if you want.
Yeah, we can talk. We're going to delve into some of that and things that, I'm sure we both had to contend with over time. But one of the things I really wanted to mention, obviously it's amazing that one person could impact, your life like that to really help you in deciding the direction you should go. One thing I wanted to know if you had any other role models, particularly people like Dr. Rebecca Lee Crumpler, like did someone like that impact you in your career also?
Well, actually, I didn't even learn of Dr. Crumpler until much, much later on. Again, in my early life, truly looking back on my personal life, I have to say, I don't feel that I had any role models at the time because I didn't even have much family. I never knew any of my grandparents. I had an absentee father who I later found and met when I was 49 years old. That was culture shock. My mother, she did a good job when I was younger. I found out later on she really had some issues going on that I had to kind of even protect myself from. I think one person that was helpful to me in my later teenage years was my pastor, Reverend Wyatt T. Walker, who used to work with Martin Luther King, as a matter of fact. So he used to encourage me, and sometimes would even call me, hello, doctor. He would call me doctor. So I think that got in my brain. So I really just had to kind of stay focused, some kind of way I had discipline and motivation to kind of keep my head down. About Dr. Crumpler, I did not learn of her, and just so everybody will know, Dr. Rebecca Lee, as the Civil War raged in 1864, she became the first Black female physician in the United States. And that's just a remarkable feat. And she later married Dr. Mr. Crumpler. And she actually ended up graduating from what is now Boston University School of Medicine, which ironically is where I went to medical school. But I did not learn of her when I was at BU Med. I did not know her story. And hers is a
Right, but when,
courageous story.
yeah, when you hear about people like that and some of the things that they've had to encounter from racism to, sexism, I mean, that's very real as well. I myself grew up in a medical family, and I know one of the greatest women in dentistry happened to be in my dad's graduating class at Howard, Dr. Jean Sinkford. And I remember going by and looking at the picture of her on my dad's wall. She was the only woman in the class of about a dozen men. And I looked at the picture. She was just this beautiful woman. And I asked my dad, I said, "Who is this beautiful woman?" And he said, "Why, that's Dr. Jean Sinkford. She's the smartest one in the class. And the only woman in the class." And I said, "Well, I tell you what, she must be a bad mamma jamma because she's got to put up with all of you, but she also has her PhD, just an incredible woman." And I learned about her, being the lone survivor on the Tuskegee panel and that kind of thing. So I'm always amazed by women like yourself who've done such incredible things within their career, despite, odds. And people need to know that no matter what level that you're at, that you're always going to face some type of challenge, and how you handle it or deal with it is really what's important. I
Yeah, and
wanted
I
to
think
move
regarding
on.
Dr.
Go ahead.
Rebecca Crumpler, her story too, because she kind of had an early role model when she was young. She was raised by her aunt in Delaware, and she modeled her energies after her aunt because her aunt was a caretaker of people. She saw her aunt give care to people. So Rebecca actually left Delaware and went to Boston and became a nurse. And the doctors with whom she worked at the hospital then when she was being a nurse, they were so impressed with her that they actually recommended that she apply to medical school. And so she did. She applied to the New England Female Medical College, which later merged with Boston University School of Medicine. So, per the recommendation of those white doctors, she applied, was accepted, matriculated, graduated. And then, to speak of a courageous woman, when the war ended in 1865, a year after she graduated, she actually went to Virginia to take care of recently freed slaves that the white doctors refused to take care of. And while she was there, I've done a lot of research on her. Reportedly, the hospitals denied her privileges to admit her patients. The pharmacists didn't want to honor her prescriptions. And it's also written that some people said that the MD behind her name stood for mule driver. Now,
Wow.
talking about microaggressions, okay, that's pretty
Right.
vile.
Have
So,
you had to deal with anything like that within your own profession? I mean, that was a long time ago, so it seems, but I'm sure you yourself have had to deal with certain things as many of us have.
oh yeah, absolutely. And getting back to my high school teacher, I remember after a PTA meeting at high school, I was standing right there. I can see it right now. She was the history teacher and also the school's vice principal. And I remember her saying to my mother, make sure she takes typing because Black people don't become doctors. Okay. But fortunately, I already knew better because I had Dr. Weathers. So I knew that was not true. I knew that wasn't true. So thank God for Dr.
Thankfully.
Weathers. Oh, yeah. I mean,
Yes.
if you can see it, you can believe it. You can see that you can be it. So that was really good. And then also too, I went to, again, Boston University School of Medicine, mostly a predominantly white medical school. At the time I was in class, there were 90 students altogether. Only 9 of us were Black. And thank God I made it through there. In fact, there's a picture of me walking across the stage, and someone happened to catch me thanking, like looking up, thanking God that I made it out of there. And then to come here to Emory, to the South, here in Atlanta, I was a little nervous about that. And you hear little snide remarks. And I remember even one time I was, even after I had already trained, I was actually a practicing physician and everything. And I was on call for the emergency room one night. And some patient was brought in by helicopter from a rural community. And I was the OBGYN on call. She was hemorrhaging internally. And they had told the husband, because the patient was half conscious, Dr. McCloud's on her way and blah, 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 blah. And I had already given some orders over the phone what to do based on what they told me. So I got to the emergency room. In the room, hello, I'm Dr. McCloud. And really, this woman had a ruptured ectopic pregnancy, which is a ruptured tubal pregnancy, basically. And I walk in the room, and the guy says, he basically, oh no, we're not having some black doctor operate on my wife. And he just, and the nurse was like, you want Dr. McCloud to operate on her? He's like, oh no, we don't. So they actually signed out what we call AMA, against medical advice. I mean, so it happens. It happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to believe, in the 21st century, but that, leads me into sort of an interesting statistic I found. According to some of the research I found on Zippia, the career experts, there are currently 23,154 OBGYNs, with 82% being women and 14.8% being men. Now, of those, almost 66% are actually Caucasian and 11% are African American. So, with that, what I also read is that the numbers are dwindling and there's likely to be a shortage of OBGYNs, especially within the next 10 years. So, what do you attribute that to from your perspective?
Well, I think one overall perspective is when it comes to seeing and believing, we need to show again more blacks that yes, you can be physicians. And the more that we have, the more can be seen. And so that's one thing. I think secondly, though, overall, and not only just for OBGYNs, but overall, medicine today is not what it really needs to be. And the healthcare profession has kind of become a healthcare industry. So it's not as pure. It's kind of tainted by big business and insurance. So I think a lot of would-be physicians may be turned off a little bit because it's not a pure profession as it used to be. Also, the strain of life as an OBGYN, I mean, it's tough. It's not an easy schedule. When I was in training, I mean, I worked, when I was in training, I worked about 115 hours a week, which was just grueling. And then in practice, sometimes 80 or so hours a week, 80, 90 hours a week, even cross covering with another doctor. Nowadays, the hours are better, but medicine itself overall is not what it could be and needs to be. And I'm just saying that straight up. But we do lag with blacks in medicine altogether for women and men. And actually, we have fewer black men in medicine than we do black women, which happens across the board in other things too, entrepreneurship and everything.
Right, I've definitely seen those numbers coming, from Meharry, which produces, 41% of the nation's African American dentists and physicians. So that is a huge issue that is going to definitely need to be dealt with. And something else that I read was that more people are going, as opposed to private practice, they're working for, big healthcare organizations. And so I think you take caring out of the formula sometimes, health
Absolutely.
caring.
Absolutely. It's tough now for people who are still in private practices or trying to hold on to their private practice. If you're not part of that big hospital conglomerate that's in bed with the insurance companies, the private community physicians are really being kind of locked out, or they may not get the same compensation deal. It's an unfair practice right now.
It's the machine. I
It's
remember my father fighting vehemently against that because I think he saw the future like that it was going to no longer be about
They
people's
should
lives
care.
and caring about people and more about the dollars. And that I don't know where we're headed with this, but I did want to ask you, not having enough OBGYNs, in the future, what kind of impact might that have on our communities?
Well, OB is where everything starts because it's from birth that we all begin. So we need obstetricians. To not have enough OBGYNs in any community is going to affect women's health care in general. A lot of people may, sometimes a family practitioner may do some obstetrical work, but still, there's a specialty training that we go through as OBGYNs, and that cannot be negated or it should not be minimized. It shouldn't be overlooked. And it's something that we really need to make sure we encourage people to keep going into, because maternal care is where it all starts. How you are taken care of, and how you are treated, how you receive care as a pregnant woman, that leads to how well the baby is going to do. If you have better care and you start your prenatal care early, you don't wait till you're already, in your second, late second or third trimester, you start prenatal care early. The earlier you start prenatal care, the better off the mother is going to be, and most likely the better off the baby's going to be. So we need doctors to be in place so that the women will have a safe place and a healthy place to get that medical care, from day one. And even pregnancy counseling is important. To know your medical history, go over that with the OBGYN doctor, what risks you face. So it's a wide thing, and we need OB doctors to be present and more doctors to enter the field.
Most definitely. We're going to take a quick break, a little commercial break here. When we come back, we're going to talk with Dr. Melody McLeod about her newly released book, Black Women's Wellness. You've got this. It's a guide to health, sex, and phenomenal living. We'll be back right after this.
A lot of things have come to a screeching halt due to COVID-19, but you should know that the court system in Tennessee is still open and holding in-person hearings for orders of protection and other types of abuse cases. If you have a hearing date, double-check on where your hearing will be held. If you need assistance on an order of protection or temporary restraining order, contact the Legal Aid Society at 1-800-238-1443 or visit our website at www.las.org.
And welcome back. You're listening to the Celeste Stein Show, and I'm here with Dr. Melody McLeod, an obstetrician gynecologist who is here for a candid discussion on women's health. Again, thank you for joining us. I wanted to ask you about your book a little bit here at this juncture. I wanted to find out, why now did you decide to release this book in January on Black women's health in particular?
Well, I've been writing for a few years here and there, and you may see other books in the bookstores and in the library written by white physicians or other physicians, but rarely have I seen any current news about Black health, despite the disparity numbers that we hear. And, we're lucky if we get a line or a paragraph, never mind a chapter, and some of the books that are out there. So there was just an opening to directly address Black women's health, and men information is in there as well. I think too, over the years, some publishers have been reluctant to publish books about Black health because the industry kind of had a feeling of Black people may not read a book or Black people may not read about their health. But I can say that with COVID, and the terrible condition and life-stealing disease that COVID has been, it has really caused many more people to say, you know what, maybe I need to pay more attention to my health. And I think so people are more aware, they need to pay attention to it, they know they need to pay attention to it. And I'm grateful to the publisher, Sounds True, because they recognized that there is a need to get the message out there to help Black women have a resource that they can turn to reference, because sometimes people are reluctant to go to the doctor. I don't want to go. I don't want to find out. I'm afraid. Well, mama just said try this, so I'm just gonna pray about it. But sometimes when symptoms start popping up, even just to have a reference, even to kind of push you through that fear, maybe like maybe it's good to have a reference book to read about some things and learn about yourself. And I get into family history. I have a checklist in there to check your look at your family history. I start out with that early in the book, to start out, I have a whole list of diseases and, mother, father, sister, brother, cousins, et cetera. So,
well, some men, I tell you, something has to almost be falling off for them to go to the doctor. And women as caregivers, we're the ones that, typically, I'm the one that's making the appointments and getting people into the doctor. And I just worry, that, what's going to happen if you don't have people who are, paying attention here and leading the family in the right direction as far as caregiving goes. And so that's going to lead us to a discussion on a whole thing as it relates to children and COVID. We're going to talk about that in just a minute, but I wanted to continue about the book. What would you say is the status on Black women's health today? Are things improving or have things actually taken a turn for the worse following the COVID pandemic?
Oh my, well, COVID has again affected everybody in a negative way, but I think with regard to Black health data, and in fact, I have a whole bunch of it. I have a section in every chapter, Black Women's Health in Focus. Okay, depending on what the topic might be, it might be heart disease, it might be lung diseases, it might be GYN issues. So overall, yeah, we have the highest mortality rate from heart disease. We have the highest death rate from stroke of all women, 38 deaths per 100,000 for Blacks compared to 22,000 for whites. We have the highest mortality from breast, lung, and other cancers. White women may get breast cancer more frequently, but Black women still die from it more frequently. Maternal mortality, you've heard a lot about that in the news in the last couple of years. Maternal mortality is, we are really, really in bad shape with that. And a lot of that is because we don't get to the doctor right away. And I'm just going to show you quickly. Actually, you can see this graph kind of.
Yeah.
This is Black, excuse my nails. This is Black women right here. I didn't do my nails today. I've been scrubbing and scrubbing and all that. So, hey, I'm just like everybody else. You know what I mean?
Right. I completely understand.
Oops. Okay.
You don't see me showing mine.
I mean, I've been cleaning and stuff. I'm sorry, y'all. Okay.
But it's okay.
See that the tall line, that's Black. Yeah. Okay. That's us compared to everybody else. The next one is Native Alaskan women, Asian, and these are white women here. So Black
at the highest.
White. Okay. Black, white. You see where we are.
We're looking at mortality rates.
Yeah, this is pregnancy related mortality rates. Okay. So this is critical. This is critical. And also too, what I have in here about infant mortality. We have twice the rate of infant deaths compared to whites. We have 11 infant mortalities compared to 4 for whites. And in the book, I say our goal with this book even isn't to be more like white people, is to be healthier Black women. Okay, that's our goal, to be healthier.
To be healthier. I mean, to not try to be like anybody else.
No, we just need to be healthier for ourselves.
Exactly.
We need to be healthier for ourselves.
Well,
and infant mortality can be reduced by early prenatal care. You have to, we need to get in there and get that early prenatal care because we can pick up on hypertension, diabetes, fetal anomalies. Babies may have a heart issue. So getting those regular appointments early is really critical to help prevent pregnancy-related mortality.
Well, I know, getting into, seek care is one part of it. I also wanted to ask, how much of actually being able to receive care, as we've heard a lot about health equity and disparities in healthcare amongst African Americans and other minorities, or even people who live in, Appalachia or rural communities, not actually having access to healthcare. I was, part of a group that helped initiate a clinic in an area that had no dental care. That's like a little over an hour, just a little over an hour outside of Nashville. But it was crucial. They were seeing, they were actually seeing pregnant women who had lost all their teeth because they hadn't, during the pandemic, hadn't gone for dental care. I mean, some of the clinics were closed, and then some went out of business. Many, no one's talking about this, but no, we know several doctors went out of business. Their practices closed. They couldn't afford to keep them open. And paying these high amounts on rent and all the equipment, it's very, very expensive to maintain a practice. So, I mean, is that a big part of it too? Not just us seeking care, but not even being able to receive care after the pandemic. I mean, are you seeing that in the greater Atlanta area?
Yeah, we have a good number of physicians here, in the metro area, but surely the rural community is kind of just outside the metro area. Yeah, there are fewer physicians. Some of the clinics even have closed down, clinics that were serving poor and underserved populations. They've closed
Right.
down. Sometimes
Completely
people,
or just temporarily? Because
I
I
know a
mean, I
few that have
know a
closed down
few.
altogether because they just couldn't keep, and then so that leaves an entire community or maybe even a county of people with no health care. They have to drive an hour and a half or 2 hours to get to
Yes.
the next physician's practice, or
Right.
to a hospital that can give them the quality of care that they need or their little infant baby might need.
Right. And you think, transportation is not a given anymore. I mean, a lot of things were discontinued. I mean, supply chain issues, people are like, it's twice as much to buy a used vehicle, So this is really something we haven't even begun to see the impact, I think, of. And as time goes on, we're certainly going to need to talk more about this. But we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, please stay tuned. We're actually going to touch on Roe v. Wade. So we'll be back right after this.
When it comes to relationships, there are some obvious signs you can use to spot someone who might be abusive. First, they have a tendency to want to rush into a relationship. They may also show signs of jealousy and mistrust, and you could find they expect you to be perfect and will try to cut you off from other important relationships. They could also be abusive towards animals and children. To learn more about the signs of dangerous individuals and how you can identify and avoid unhealthy relationships, contact the Legal Aid Society at 1-800-238-1443.
It's important. I talk about
And
domestic
welcome
violence in the
back.
book.
Yes, that's something else that I think a lot of people face. I've actually had a whole show on that where people couldn't get out. I mean, and financially couldn't get out. So there, those numbers were way up during the pandemic. So these are issues that I know it's like so many, there's so many bigger issues. You can't even get into this stuff right now. It's crazy, but we must. We have to be resilient. And I think I'm so glad that you wrote your book because, obviously you touch on being resilient and, coming back after all these things that we face as women, as Black women. I think you're to be commended for addressing that at such an important time.
Thank
I
you.
want to talk about the fact that we talked about going back in time a little bit. On June 24th of last year, we know that the U.S. Supreme Court did overturn Roe v. Wade, the landmark 1973 Supreme Court decision that affirmed the constitutional right to abortion. How is the new decision impacting Black women in particular? And the Black family from your perspective.
Well, I think that the fact that that was overturned has done a terrible injustice to women's health because it may have stopped what the Supreme Court wants to stop, but it's not going to stop some women from getting an abortion. The problem is, instead of it being done in a safe environment under controlled medical circumstances, some women will resort to what was done years ago, backstreet alley abortions. There'll be a lot of hemorrhaging. There'll be loss of life. And sometimes with women, and a lot of times the people who seek abortions, in fact, may already have a family or they may already have children, but for whatever reason, they may decide, this another child right now is not what they want to do or feel that what they want to have. And so I think for legislators to say what a woman should or should not do within something in her body, it is going to impact women's health and safety. It's endangering women's health is the bottom line, truthfully. People can choose what they want to do, but I think for someone to legislate that a woman can't do something with her own body is going to lead to more female mortality and morbidity and even death and hemorrhage.
I don't know. I feel like politics should just be kept out of healthcare
I
altogether, but
think
we've
women only,
seen.
I don't think any men should get to vote on any female-related health issues. That's what I think.
They just don't know,
We just don't quite understand the mechanics.
huh? Yeah, well, that's a whole hairy can of worms I'm gonna stay away from, but
I just think now I do think
it's true.
if it's a woman's health issue in the legislature, I think only let the female legislators vote on that. Just
You can only understand as a woman, right? I tell you what. We touched on infant mortality rates. I want to give a quick statistic I found. EconoFact reports that the US birth rate has actually fallen 20% since 2007. So the largest decline is among Black and Hispanic women at 9%. And since the Great Recession of 2007, this steady decline has continued, which in the past has usually typically recovered when the economy recovered, but not this time. So this is not being explained by demographic, economic, or policy changes. Can you explain it? You're there on the
Oh
ground. You see what's
my
going
God, I
on.
don't know if I have that answer. Let me look in my book and see what I said about that.
Yeah,
I
I
think
mean.
with regard to Black women, and it's kind of, I think in a way it's kind of a mixed bag because sometimes we are seeing more younger people having babies maybe before they're really ready, but at the same time we do see more single women going on and getting their education, and they're achieving, they're becoming business owners, or they're going off with, high degrees, or trying to get to the C executive suite in the corporate office. So sometimes, again, people may put, well, marriage numbers are down, tremendously, unfortunately. But a lot of women are just going on with their careers because one, they may not be able to find a spouse, or two, they because they don't have that, they're like, I'm just going to go ahead and buckle down and get my degree and get a job and grow my business. So they may be putting off childbearing much later and not having as many babies. Also, in the white community too, they say too that the numbers of births have gone down. In fact, that gets into
Right,
the whole political
overall.
thing of, so it's kind of a national thing and that the numbers are going down with regard to new babies being born. But I think a lot of Black women are, many of them are going on with school and getting a job because, again, marriage stats are so low too. It's like, I need to do something to make sure I'm taking care of myself.
Right, absolutely. And when we talk about taking care of oneself, women do tend to be the caregivers, as we've discussed. And we often will take care of others, before we
Before
even
we
take
take care of
care of
ourselves.
ourselves. But, I always heard too, you've got to kind of, if you're flying in a plane, they were like, grab the oxygen mask and put it on yourself first, put it on your face, and then you can then help the next person. Well, the same thing when it comes to our families, but I'm seeing women appear, depleted more than ever before. It seems like it was already getting to be a lot, as a working woman taking care of a family, people are disjointed. People are, they're not staying in the same communities. They're moving away for school, or they get married and move away. And so that core unit of family caretakers and people that you can rely on, you know, it's not there anymore. And so people seem overwhelmed, kind of tired. What observations have you made regarding women's health and wellness and how women are faring when it comes to taking care of themselves, you know, post-pandemic?
Yes, well, and again, I do mention that in the book too, because, like you said, we have to take care of ourselves. And women, yes, we are the caretaker of the family for the most part. When it comes to, honey, you that doesn't look. What are you taking you to the doctor, or the kids,
Right.
that. So that's how it is. I mean, it's just how it is, really. The women basically take care of the home and direct the medical appointments, and we're so busy extending ourselves and giving of ourselves. And, we can think of a whole bunch of different things at one time that has to be handled. And a lot of it's that we're handling for other people. And we may not take time for ourselves to just take a chance to exhale. In fact, last night I was on the phone with a friend of mine and I was worried about him. She's actually taken on, she's adopted her niece because that mother passed and the niece is 16. And it's just a bit much. She was just crying and distraught, and it's just, and we're fighting up with social media, which is a challenge for a lot of people and all that. So you have to allow yourself to take time for yourself. And it's not being selfish if you just say, listen, I just need a moment, or I just need this afternoon, or I need today. Okay. Go
Right.
do something. Can you cook tonight? Can you take the kids? Or I just need this day. And you need to take some time and find what you enjoy. If you just need some
Right.
quiet time, or just, jazz or some music, or get into some art, or yoga or meditation or sister friendship, find what gives you some peace. For me, it's nature and it's water. I love water. Water is that just
Right.
That's my zen. So you've got to take time for yourself. It's okay to do that. Give yourself permission to take care of yourself as well.
Right. Absolutely. I think sometimes I have a lot of friends that tend to feel guilty, when it comes to, taking that little time out, going to the gym or what have you. And so it leads to one bad habit after another, though, when you don't, you'll gain weight, you won't de-stress, and so you'll always seem like you're angry about something, all these things happen, and you've got to. I mean, it's, for me, the older I get, the more I know it's a necessity, that you have to really take time out for yourself. And it's not an easy thing to do when you really are, devoted and really wanna see the well-being of others. It's not easy,
Yeah,
but
and in fact,
you
my
have
friend that
to.
I was talking to last night, she actually is a minister. She's a preacher. So people are calling on, pulling on her all the time. She's in a small community. She's not here local. She's in a small kind of rural community. And so she was saying, people were saying, well, Reverend, I need you to talk about this, but I need prayer about this. I need, you know, and I told her, I said, you know what, you might need to just tell her, I said, listen, y'all, right now I need some prayer. Okay. She needs it.
It's like, hold on, wait a
Yeah, like
minute,
right now the preacher needs a little help right now. Okay? You just have to.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's talk for a moment again about health equity. It's duly noted that African Americans, Hispanics, and Native Americans in particular have not had the same access to healthcare as others. Do you see this as primarily an economic issue, or is there a lot more to it than that?
I think economics has something to do with it. I think with the Native American people, God bless the Native American people, that they are hanging in as best they can, but they really have not been treated fairly here in this country. They don't have the resources nearby. The government, in many ways, has overlooked their needs and doesn't provide services where they are. And they're making do as best they can. For the Black community, there are food deserts. There are things that are lacking in the Black communities that could we need to better our health. And then too, we have to make sure that we make use of the things that are available. I mean, here in Atlanta, where I lived, in fact, years ago, on the people were saying, oh, we need grocery stores with fresh food. We need bookstores. We need this, that, and the other. And so finally, some developers actually developed a particular area, and they put a big bookstore there, and they actually had a good grocery store there. And do you know that the only thing really that has survived there is a particular restaurant and the hair supply place,
Oh my goodness.
the beauty
Well,
supply. Okay, they are thriving. In fact, they bought or renting up their another space that belonged to part of the bookstore. So, we have to make use of what's there for us for our good to better our community. And I'm a proponent of that. Okay, because even with churches, we may have a concert and the church is packed out, but you have a health fair, and if you
and
get
nobody.
30 or 40 people to show up, that's good. So we have to get into some personal responsibility. We have to weigh what's important. Okay, music is good. I like some old school gospel music, but also too, if your church is providing health services and there's free screening or free mammograms, if they've gone through the trouble of arranging these things, and if you can't afford it on your own or you don't have medical insurance, and these services are available to you, make use of them.
Right.
Make use of
I
them.
think we also, need to really speak up when we see these things going on and demand change. And that's work we have to do ourselves. I used to teach a health communications class at a HBCU, and I'll just say the community surrounding the campus, was an older community, and it kind of was cut off from the rest of everything else. But we would make observations about just things that, the students would comment on, things they noticed within the community, like that there wasn't a grocery store within walking distance. All the billboards in the area had liquor
The alcohol.
ads up there. It was like or tobacco. It was never anything, positive or healthy. And like you said, the businesses that existed around there were primarily hair stores and things like that. So, or fast food, chicken restaurants or what have you, that it's like I can't get anything healthy to eat. And many people come in from all other areas, so they see, oh, this isn't like this over here. What's going on? And so we, when we note those things, obviously we should start thinking of it as an opportunity for improvement, for advancement in how we look at things and try to do some things. That's why they're in school, maybe do some things to help improve where we are. One of the things I read recently too, there was a very alarming statistic that I saw on the Centers for Disease Control website. Then I don't know if you've seen this or heard this, but I read it last week. It stated that 65% of African American children are now orphaned by one or both parents following COVID. Do you think that society is prepared to deal with the alarming fact that we're talking about here? And who's going to raise these children?
Yeah, I did see that statistic last week, and it was very concerning. Again, I think that really just speaks to, again, how we really need to make sure one and or both and both parents are one unified in taking care of the family, unified in realizing that you do have to take care of your health, unified in getting your kids checked out, and for yourself, again, because if they lost a parent, maybe someone had a pre-existing condition that they hadn't been tending to, and therefore
Right.
when COVID hit or they got COVID, they were gone. So children have been orphaned, the loss of one or sometimes even both parents is, both parents are gone. So again, there are ways for you to learn about what needs to be done, the use of clinics, and also notice too that I want people also to stop being so caught up with celebrity culture and the media and posting, because we're realizing too, another report that came out last week is the effect that all the social media is having on our children's brains and their mental health. And also, that we need to make sure that people aren't spending so much time with their screens and communicating more and language skills more, because that's affecting mental health and depression. The young kids are being depressed with Instagram posts because their thing didn't go as viral. So it's a matter of focusing and following through, I would say. Follow through is really key.
Right.
Yeah. You got
Those
to
are some
follow through.
great notations on how, we might be able to level the playing field and really see a paradigm shift occur that will lead to a positive impact on healthcare within the Black family.
And education, yeah, education overall. Education is important.
Yes. We're going to take one more quick break, and we come back as we come back, we're going to wrap up by just talking a little bit more here with Dr. McLeod on women's health. We'll be back in a moment.
Domestic violence between intimate partners is expected to rise by 20% during and coming out of the quarantine shutdown. There are steps you can take to protect yourself. Don't wait for an abuser to hurt you. Call the police if you feel threatened. If your abuser begins to stalk you, it might be time for an order of protection. Once you get it, carry it with you and show it to police if you must call them. For more information, call the Legal Aid Society at 1-800-238-1443.
And welcome back. You're listening to the Celeste Stein Show, and I'm here with Dr. Melody McLeod. And Dr. McLeod, I want to talk a little bit more about your book and the emphasis in particular that you place on sex and phenomenal living. In my career, I've been around a lot of students, more recently, who were on the dating scene, and there was a lot of talk about how COVID really took a good 2 years out of people's lives when it came to dating and intimate relationships.
Tell me
I had
about
one student,
it.
one of my students had me cracking up. She was like, well, it's really hard when you have this covering your face and you can't see this part right here. And she's just like, can you just take that down just a little bit? She goes, it really makes a big difference to be able to see someone's whole face. And so we're dealing with a lot there. Fortunately, we finally are beyond the mask mandates and all of that. But what are some of the things that you kind of observe when it comes to women as it relates to sex and COVID, and how much did that actually put a damper on things?
Well, as one who still wears her mask regularly, and I'm not letting, I tell someone, I tell someone, it's in a way, it's kind of kept me away from some people who I had no interest in. But I'm like, look, I'm not letting anybody in my face space, is what I'm calling, which really has gotten to be kind of lonely. It's like,
right. My sister is really like that. She is something else, overboard. She's like 6 feet,
Yeah, no, honestly, people think COVID is over. Honestly, I know, people, I want it to be over. I wear my mask all the time. I was at an event this morning. I was happy to see, ironically too, I'm noticing publicly more Black people are still wearing their masks compared to some white people I've noticed. Okay. And I'm happy to see that, but I still wear my mask. I don't care. And a good friend of mine, who's loved me forever, really the husband I never married, I guess. We went to college and medical school together, and I'm more of a surgeon, and I like the tumors and to get in there and, take things out and dissect stuff. He's more into the micro stuff, like the subviral DNA, da, da, da. And
right,
so
right,
he's
right.
on some board about COVID, and he said, Mel, it's really not over yet. It's just not over. And so I
we
said,
want
well,
it to
good.
be
That means
so
that,
bad.
It's not over. It's so it
Right.
really has, COVID has put a damper on a lot of intimacy and relationships. So if people are married, stay that way, hopefully, as long as you're not being abused and you can get along and you like each other, or you know that, go to your room, or so you need a little space. But, it, you know, In one way, maybe some things have been good because people started doing more virtual things, and I think some of those dating sites, they somehow allowed virtual meeting of people through,
Yes.
these things. So you kind of got to maybe know people a little bit from talking to them, and you got to see them through the screen. But it did interfere and still does interfere with those who are still being very cautious about kissing and intimacy. And I've seen a few jokes, but we won't get into those here about how to have sex during COVID, but we will not discuss that. We'll tell you what
I
the
mean, people, I watched something I saw online where they were really having an open and very candid discussion
is.
about all of that. And I think a lot of people really, I mean, they haven't talked about it, but I definitely think a lot of things changed, during that time. And still, even now, I mean, I think about, just going out in public places. I mean, I've changed my behavior, I go early in the morning. I'm an early bird, so I go when nobody is
Yeah,
there. I just try to
it's
do things like
depressing.
that.
I mean, I wrote
Yes.
this book during COVID, and I even in the book at the back, during the afterword or whatever, I was writing how, I mean, I love medicine, I love writing, I love giving a good word of health and education to someone. I enjoy talking about health and sex and relationships, but this was really it was a tough time for me to write because we have what's called languishing with COVID. You kind of like you wake up and it's my God, what. When is this going to be over? You miss being around friends up close and personal. I like to throw parties at my home, and I hadn't done that in a while, and so it was just a tough time to write. But I stuck through it. But it did affect our psyche. It affected our interactions, our comfort. We're still not back to 100%. We're not back, and I don't know when that's going to be. But with regard, one more thing about sex, I do encourage women in the book. That we are a part of, that's a part of who we are too, because sometimes we and the whole thing about Black women and sex is kind of a mixed bag. Okay, either we're being kind of wild and out there and all that, or sometimes a lot of Black women, they have hang-ups about sex. It's just not, so you it's okay. We're emotional beings, we're spiritual beings. Most of us have maternal instincts, and sexual instincts are just as natural a part of who we are too. But I do tell people to guard your, in the back, I have guard your garden, guard yourself, because
Right.
you got to be careful out there. You don't want to be getting all kinds of diseases. You need to know who you're going to be with, and you got to look out for the, folks may not tell you all of what they're doing. And the reason why we have HIV/AIDS, the highest in the Black community, Black females are still the fastest growing demographic of HIV/AIDS cases. And truthfully, if I may just quickly say, the reason for that is, and I want you ladies to listen up, and you men too, is purely hetero women are having sex with men on the down low that aren't telling them that they go both ways. Okay. And they're infecting these women. And that's why we have a high number of Black women, purely hetero women, with the highest number of HIV/AIDS cases that are new in our society today. So be careful out there.
Right. Well, one thing you said, women need to take care of themselves, and I know we're almost out of time, but I really want to touch on this point. I think in the African American community in particular, I used to date someone who was a psychologist, and it was this running joke. It's like Black people don't go to therapy. I mean, but I'm hearing more and more about that. And people, when we say take care of ourselves, how much emphasis are you placing on, seeking professional help at this time?
Oh, totally. And therapy is so important. And I think too with Blacks, most Blacks are Christians, so it's kind of like I've got God. I don't need to talk to some therapist, or I'm just gonna pray it through. But no. I mean, prayer is good. I believe in prayer. But sometimes it's good to go and talk to someone. And that's for men, women, and men. Okay, because men may not want to go, but it's just so healing and helpful to go and flesh out some of that stuff and get it out. And the therapist can help you kind of peel back some of those onions on those painful issues in your life that are hurting you and draining you and hurting your relationships. And I even get into some things about narcissistic personality disorder and borderline person. There are a lot. That's a whole other show if we can do that again, because mental health And also racism, the
Absolutely.
effect of racism on mental health is an issue
Oh
too.
yes. Microaggression. You touched on some serious topics today that could go on. You know, we could go on because
And it's
they're not
not in
really being
here, believe it or
addressed.
not.
Yeah.
I really did cover it all. It's all the physical stuff, but I also get into mental health, microaggressions, societal stress, and Black women's health, the rejection connection. Why do we fare so poorly? I say it's not only lack of access to insurance or lack of medical services. I say some of the societal stress, this microaggression, the stuff we take that's thrust upon us, that's affecting our cortisol and our heart disease and our hypertension. And that's causing us to have higher stress, which is giving us issues that can lead to higher death rates. I have a chart in the societal stress and Black women's health, the rejection connection. And check it out.
Absolutely. Well, this has been some great information, a wealth of information, certainly great advice. And Dr. McLeod, it has certainly been a pleasure having you on today. Thank you so much for joining us. And if people would like to get more information, they can find your book on Amazon. And I think,
It's wherever books are sold, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, your independent bookstore, Target, Walmart. And if they don't have it, you
right.
call them and tell them to get it, but it's available wherever books are sold. But Amazon, you go on, click right now. Make it number
Right, that's
one.
right. That's right. Well, thank you again for joining me. That's all the time we do have for now. I'm your host, Dr. Celeste Stein. We'll see you again in 2 weeks. Go out there and make it a great day.